Okay, in the aftermath of the earthquake in Haiti, I received a number of emails, people asking me questions, and what was amazing is that a number of people were questioning whether Israel should have gone there and helped or not helped, and I think I touched this a little bit a couple of weeks ago, but it's only ultra-Orthodox people that can have such thoughts that maybe it's wrong to go in, maybe it's wrong to break Shabbat, maybe it's wrong to save non-Jews, and maybe it's a Chilul Hashem and not a Kiddush Hashem. As I said, it was quite interesting. To most of them, to some I just gave a very simple answer and said, why don't you look in the book of Yonah and see how God feels about saving idolaters? God apparently is concerned about such things. And to others, I said, if you really want a methodology in trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong, so the first thing to look is what we're supposed to do. What does Jewish law say about it? So I think that we established pretty much a couple of weeks ago in terms of the idea of Suffolk Pekuach Nefesh. We're on a technical point, that if there was even a suspicion of one Jew in the whole country, then you can send people in on Shabbat, start digging up all of the place to try to save that one Jew. So let's start all over again now and get to what I avoided last time, and that is, but what about if we're not talking about saving a non-Jew? What about if the question is saving... Sorry, what if the question is not if you're saving a Jewish life, what if you're saving a non-Jewish life? Is one permitted to break Shabbat in order to save a non-Jewish life? And by the time I finish today, no matter what I end up saying, there will be people who will be upset, which I guess is a good thing. But if they are upset, I'll say right now, so we won't argue later, anybody who's upset at the end is very silly. But you're allowed to be silly. Just letting you know. In 1965, there was an episode unfolded in Israel, which caused an incredible debate within Israel and ended up having reverberations outside of the country as well. There was an article that was written in Haaretz, which reported that a non-Jew was in a life and death situation on Shabbat. I believe the situation was that he had a heart attack, and somebody came to a home of an Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox Jew and asked, "Can I use your phone to call an ambulance to save the person's life?" And the person reportedly responded, "It's Shabbat, absolutely not. You can't use my phone." The person who then told the story then said that he then checked with the Beit Din to find out if this person acted correctly, and the Beit Din said, in fact, he did act correctly. As the story was told in Haaretz, the individual had the heart attack, died, and all this was because of Jewish law. Now, there's a couple of problems with the story. The biggest problem is that it never happened, but that's just a technical issue. The what? Well, one tends to do that. One tends to do that. The person who told the story was a fellow named Yisrael Shachak, who later admitted that he really did make it up, but it didn't make so much of a difference because it could have happened. And this was after it was discovered that there was no person who died. He could not identify the person who died. He could not identify the house, the person who would not let the phone be used, could not identify which Beit Din reportedly said all this, which is, he made up the whole story. None of it was true, which did not stop Haaretz from picking it up and did not stop there to be a whole debate about it. And as far as Jewish law, I think, according to every opinion that we're going to see, for somebody else to use a phone, I'm not sure exactly where the problem even begins. I don't want to speak all that much about this Dr. Shachak, but I will just tell you a little bit. If you want to read about it, you could find a story online or a response online by the Lord, Rabbi Emanuel Jacobowitz, who you may may or may not know, was an expert in medical issues. That's what his doctorate is in. That's what his whole academic background was in. And he did write a response to this, which was called A Modern Blood Libel, L'Affair Shachak, which is in Tradition, Volume 8, the summer of 1966, pages 58 to 65. So if you go and you go searching, you can't find that that article. The chief rabbi, Rav Unterman, at the time responded as well to this. As I said, a lot of people responded, which was wonderful that this fellow was able to get so much response. Just a word about Dr. Shachak, which is really not relevant, but I'll tell you anyway. He was born to a religious family. He was raised Orthodox and Zionist. His parents forbade him from speaking Yiddish. He was born in 1933. From 1940 to 1943, he was in the Warsaw Ghetto, and afterwards he was in a concentration camp, and he went through various issues that maybe is relevant, maybe not. He had a doctorate in chemistry. He was a professor in Hebrew U from 1963, I think, to 1981. In 1967, he is quoted as saying, he ceased to be a scientist and just to become a bit of political being. And I'm quoting him now. He goes, my first reason was that after 67, the Israeli aim was to dominate the Middle East, which every rational human being knows is impossible. My second reason is must be a Palestinian state, he became the head of the civil rights in Israel, the Israel League of Human Rights, and so on. And in 1965, he published an article in a Ukrainian newspaper, which is called Israel's Discriminatory Practices Are Rooted in Jewish Religious Law. So he didn't like Israel that much. He didn't like Judaism all that much. He didn't like many, many things. He wrote a book in 1996, The Bible as It Is Without a Code of Holiness. He wrote an article, Open Secrets on Israel's Nuclear and Foreign Policies. Another article, Israeli Terrorist State, Its Most Sad Assassins. He spoke out in support of Vanunu. Do I need to go on? I mean, this was a wonderful individual, but he made his career in 1965 by letting the world know about how evil Israel or Judaism really is, and for him it really didn't make a difference because as far as he was concerned, he was revealing the truth. Whether what he was saying was true or not true really didn't make any difference to him. So as I said, Lord Jacobowitz was absolutely correct. This was a blood libel. And now let's evaluate what Jewish law really would say about such a case, which means if there's a non-Jew that needs to be saved on Shabbat, I mean, his case, a non-Jew has a heart attack, what do? I mean, his case is actually easy. Somebody else wants to use your phone. I think that makes it relatively easy, without even getting into the question, which may amuse you or not amuse you, is using a phone even breaking a Torah law on Shabbat? Or is using a phone to rabbinic law? And I know that you've never really thought about that, but that itself may be quite significant. So let's go back to the beginning then. The beginning really is a person. Okay, I'll start it differently. We all know that when it comes to Shabbat, pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbat. We all know that when it comes to laws of Shabbat, if somebody's life is in danger, a life in danger pushes aside Shabbat. We all know that. Why this is the case, we don't necessarily know. As a matter of fact, in the Gemara, you do know?
You told me.
Oh, okay. Then I guess you're right. In the Gemara, a matter of fact, which you originally had on your sources, but we took it away, there is a long discussion where it's evident that the Gemara knows the same thing. They know that this is something which you do, they just don't know why. It says, this is Gemara in Yom Adaf Pehe, as I said, you don't have it. V'kfar ha-yorah b'yishmor v'rabi Akiva b'loz b'nazari mahalchin b'derech v'levi his dear v'rabi yishmor b'nosh v'rabi loz b'nazari mahalchin acharav. You had five rabbis walking together on the side of the road. Nishala shelaze b'pneihim, and a question was asked, minayin l'pikuach nefesh adochet Shabbat. How do we know that pikuach nefesh pushes away Shabbat? Which means everybody knows that's the case. The question is, where do we learn it from? Each rabbi gives his own opinion. So I didn't bother bringing this to you, what each side is. And the question really is, when it comes down to it, does it really make a difference where it comes from? And maybe the answer is yes, but this is something which... Three, right, right. So therefore, it does push away Shabbat. And as I said, this is a given. By the way, the only time that it may not have been a given was during the war against the Greeks. There we find in the Book of Maccabees that there were people that did not want to fight on Shabbat. Whether that was because that was the tradition, that was a law, or maybe there was extra sensitivity when dealing with the Greeks, where one of their things that they tried to get the Jews not to keep was Shabbat, so therefore there was an absurdity. The Greeks didn't want us to keep Shabbat, so you fight the Greeks and break Shabbat in order to be able to keep Shabbat. Again, that may have been an additional sensitivity. As far as we can tell from various Midrashim, the battle against Amalek took place on a Friday, and even there we have Midrash that the sun stood still, so they wouldn't have to break Shabbat. But the Gemara has it as a given. One of the reasons given over here is that you, bless you, is that you break Shabbat one time so a person be able to keep many Shabbatot. That's one of the reasons which is given. At the end of the day, the Gemara concludes and says, all the reasons that were given have, each one has their own weakness to them. And one, you know, later authority says, not one of those five, but later authority says, you know, if you ask me the best reason, it says, v'chai bohem, that Judaism is about living, and therefore you should live. That doesn't necessarily mean that the other five reasons were rejected. It just means that they think that this is perhaps an overriding reason. This logic that break one Shabbat so you can keep many Shabbatot is utilized all over the place in the Gemara itself and in later literature as a reason which is accepted. So I'm not so quick to get rid of it. As a matter of fact, the Gemara that we will start with, it is given as a reason, but in a very funny way. Source number one. Savar Rav Yosef Lememar. Rav Yosef wanted to say, that means that he had a svara, he had a point of logic that he thought he can say. Uludei avodet kochavim bishapta. Bishar Shari Misham Eva. He wanted to say that if there was a non-Jewish woman, and if we'll be more technical over here, it says an idolatrous woman who is about to give birth, is in the process of giving birth, should a Jewish doctor help her or not help her? So he said that he had a svarat to say that not only can he help her, but he can even get paid for it. But by the way, A little more than a month ago, I was in New York, and a friend of mine came to see me, and he said he was very bothered about something, that somebody in his shul came over and said to him, why is it that all the doctors walk around with beepers, and all the doctors break Shabbat, and all the doctors get honored, and they charge money for Shabbat, and they break it? He goes, you know, I work in computers. If I walked around with a beeper every time, people would think that I'm a Mechalel Shabbat. Why do these guys get away with it? So I looked at him, I said, because they're saving lives. I mean, I would assume at least theoretically. Well, I said, though, at the end of the day, maybe you can argue regarding him making money on it. Maybe you say, listen, somebody's life is in danger, so you should save the life, but maybe the guy shouldn't be able to take money. But the issue of money we're going to come back to, but we do have to notice that the most primary source that we're going to get to, and that is this Gemara, that Rabbi Yosef says, you know, I have reason to say that you could deliver the baby on Shabbat, and not only that, send her a bill after Shabbat. Amrle Abaye doesn't like it. Abaye says, and by the way, this is going to be a remarkable statement, as you're going to notice. Yachla lemeimar la, oh, you can always tell the woman who's giving birth, this is your reason why you can't help her. You can always tell her, didan diminitrei Shabta, Michalalin Alayhu. We who keep Shabbat, we're allowed to break Shabbat for those of us who keep it. Didchu, you, Delomintre Shabta, you who don't keep Shabbat, Lo Michalalinan. We don't break Shabbat. Now, one second. What does Abaye say over here? What can you tell to this idolatrous woman who is in labor? What's he saying? He's saying the reason that we break Shabbat is because we keep Shabbat. So I'm going to ask you again. What is he saying? He's saying, is our reason for breaking Shabbat is only because we keep Shabbat. Which goes back to one of our various arguments that you didn't see inside before. Why do you break Shabbat? If I say you break Shabbat, break one Shabbat so the person can keep other Shabbatot, so what's more important, human life or Shabbat? Let's try again. If I say that you break Shabbat in order to keep many Shabbatot, so what's more important, Shabbat or life? So then it comes down to that Shabbat is more important than life. It's not that we break Shabbat because life is more important, which, by the way, would be the conclusion if you would end up saying v'chai b'hem. And when I said a minute ago or so, you know, really doesn't make a difference which source you bring it from. The truth is, philosophically, there is going to be a difference. Because one approach will be that life is more important than Shabbat. The other approach is that Shabbat is more important than life. So that seems to be exactly what Abaye is saying. He's saying, no, we only break Shabbat because Shabbat is more important than life. So why do we break it? We break it because we normally keep it, which means it seems to be that he's accepting the rationale. Why do you break one Shabbat so the person keep other Shabbatot? You unfortunately don't keep Shabbat, so therefore we can't break Shabbat for you. And what's interesting over here is that Rabbi Yosef said, you know, I think we can break Shabbat and charge money. Abaye said, well, you can just explain this to them. And it sounds as if what Abaye is saying, and they will in fact understand. So that's something that we have to pause with for a second. And that's something which I want you to pause with for a second and just make a mental note of. But the more important thing over here is that we find that this issue is, in fact, debated. Yes?
Are they referring to a non-Jew or a non-religious Jew?
What is it? It says neither. Neither. It says an idolater, which may be very
important. That's what I'm wondering. Is this specific? In other words, there's like a, you know, like in math when you have like the union of the two things and then the subsets. It's like, in other words, are we talking about either people who Shabbat or people who worship Avodah Zarah? In other words, are you saying that it's the fact that she's an Oved Avodah Zarah that makes us say, well, we can't break Shabbat for you? Or, see what I mean?
Yeah.
We have a spectrum of categories, not just two.
Yes, we do have a spectrum of categories.
Rabbi Yosef saying specifically because she's an Oved Avodah Zarah.
Okay. Okay, good. So the question over here is, when it says idolater, is an idolater over here meant to be a generic term used for all non-Jews? Or is an idolater because this person is an idolater? That may come down to a machloket rishonim. The person who's lenient, who's the only person we're going to consider, is the Me'iri. The Me'iri is not talking about this particular Gemara, but he's talking about something which is parallel to this, and this is source number two. And in source number two, the Me'iri's language is not going to be clear. Pikuach nefesh ein olchin bo acha harov, keitzad chatzer shayu bo yisraelim vovdei alilim imahim, she'ein anu mitzuvim l'chalel Shabbat aleihim, acha she'ein lehim shum dat. So here he's talking about, the case is what it's going to get develop into, is a case where you have a Jew and many non-Jews, or many idolaters in this case. So then will you, if let's say the wall falls down, will you try to dig out the Jew? We already know the answer. You will dig out the Jew. But over here he's saying, but before he gets to that case, he's saying, but first, fundamentally, when it comes to the Jew, you're obligated to save him. When it comes to the idolaters, you're not. But he gives a very funny reason, which didn't have to be said. Why? He says, Acher she'en lehem shum dat, because they don't have any religion. Now, what does he mean by that when he says that they perhaps would argue with you? They say, we do have religion. He's referring to something else. And this can only be clarified by looking at a whole bunch of things that the Me'iri said, which we're not going to do. But I'll give you a couple of them. But first, I'll tell you what the Me'iri himself believes. In other places, the Me'iri will tell us that there are various laws in the Gemara that speak about non-Jews. He says that most of them, again, I want to be very clear, most of the laws in the Gemara that speak about non-Jews, he's going to tell you, be very careful when you read them. Are they talking about idolaters, or are they talking about somebody who doesn't have to happen to be Jewish, and there will be a very, very big difference? Because, can I remind you of something? That Judaism is around to get rid of idolatry. Judaism was at a war against idolaters. That if you found somebody committing idolatry, we would be obligated to kill them. I mean, it could be that we forgot this, and I'm amused almost every day when I say Aleinu, right? Because, you know, you have all the people, I'm not going to say this word in English, all the Yefei Nefesh, right? Do not translate this into English. Oli v'nefesh, we talk about tikkun olam. So in Aleinu, when we talk about tikkun olam, what is the tikkun olam there? Yeah, kill all the idolaters, get rid of all the idolatry, and that's tikkun olam b'malchut shakai. That's to fix the world is by getting. When in Judaism was at war against idolatry, so let's try not to forget this point. So then the question comes up: how does Christianity and Islam fit into it? The Meiri's position is that they are monotheists, and yesh lahem dat. They have religion. Which means as far as, when he says here, they don't have any dot, what he's referring to is real idolatry. As far as the Meiri is concerned, that all the Gemarot that talk about non-Jews, he says, be careful, because you will find that many of these laws just don't apply to the non-Jews that we live with today, because these non-Jews are monotheists, and therefore they have religion. And that little line there, she'ein lahem dat, that was the point. That's why you wouldn't save them. In source number 3, for example, this is in Avodah Zarah, and he writes, "Harbei ra'inu shemitpalim al shebizmanim elu ein adam nizhar midvarim elu klal ve'ein va'anu kfar bi'arnu ikar kavanat ha'sefer al eizu umahi sovevet kemo she'idu yimei ideihem she'izkarnu she'him kulam l'umot ha'kadumot." Basically, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which is what he's dealing with here, is a Gemara that tells us the day before an idolatrous event, you're not going to do business with the idolaters because they're going to use the money that you give them to buy things for idolatry. So over here, he says, oh no, all these things? It's not talking about today. It's talking about primitive people in the olden days. And again, he uses that word over here. And what's that next word? Talismash, right, is talisman. These are people who are idolaters. And he goes, therefore, there is going to be a prohibition. He'll go on to say that the people that live in our time is different. Let's look at the next source, the Meiri. It's talking about damages done between Jews and non-Jews. Over here, he says, "Shur she Yisrael shel nagach shur shel nachri patur mi din re'ehu, v'shel nachri shel nagach shel Yisrael bein tam bein muad v'shalim nezik shalim mitoch she'ein chasim al mamon zulatan konsinotam shel yergilu atzmam lehezik ulofima shenemar gemara dafka ba'amamim she'einam gidurim b'derkei datot v'nimusim." He's saying is that there are non-Jews who the Jewish court would fine them more than they would fine Jews because these were people that really didn't care about personal property. Why? Because they were pagans, and they were pagans that had no god, and they were pagans that didn't care how they treated one another. And by the way, the pagan gods generally I'm saying, I don't know of any exception to this, had no care whatsoever about interpersonal relationships. The pagan gods were only about a man-to-pagan god relationship, and therefore these people had no problem whatsoever in terms of murder or in terms of theft and so on. So it says the Jewish laws can be very strict towards them. But then he continues and he says, that's only talking about people that don't have religion. Kemosha Amar Aleim Gemara. Then he said, we're only talking about people that did not accept the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. People that accept the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach, these people, as far as he's concerned, have a completely different category. Which means the Meiri is going to be a voice of moderation. You can debate as much as you want whether the Meiri is the only voice. I mean, it doesn't make that much of a difference. And I will tell you that in his lifetime, he was probably a distinct minority in this. The Meiri's position, I think, in today's world has been adopted, certainly by modern Orthodox thinkers. I mean, the Meiri...
When did he live?
13th century. And the Meiri is somebody who, again, is very clear on this. In multiple places, if you're interested, Professor Jacob Katz, wrote about the Meiri's position in terms of history, and he has a number of different monographs on this. So if you want the exact sources, I can get them for you. Yes?
Are atheists pagans?
I don't know. Professor Katz was one of the leading historians. He died around 10 years ago. He was the mentor of Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. He wrote his doctorate for him. And he wrote a lot about the social relationship between Jews and non-Jews in throughout history, but mainly in the Middle Ages. About atheists, I don't know what to say. But again, we're going to get to a case now that we're going to, you know, before we save someone's life, we'll have to give them a test and see. And but with the Meiri's position, it would then come down to be that that when we're talking about non-Jews, we have to be very, very careful whether the Gemara is referring to idolaters or to somebody who keeps the Sheva Mitzvot, which he considers to be somebody. Somebody who keeps the Sheva Mitzvot technically is what we would call a Ger Toshav. A Ger Toshav, meaning there's a Ger who's somebody who's a convert, and there's a Ger Toshav who's somebody who lives with us. Somebody who lives with us accepts the Seven Mitzvot B'nei Noach. I know we're going to get into a political argument, which I refuse to, but I would assume that the average Druze who lives in Israel would definitely have a halacha of a Ger Toshav. Right? You'd have a very hard time arguing against that. You have people that are monotheists, people that have a religion, people that serve in the army, people that are good citizens, and so on and so forth. If you want to get into more of a political argument, I can say the same thing about the Israeli Arabs, and then you'll say, whoa, what are you talking about, so on and so forth. But we're not going to get into that discussion. But anybody who accepts the Sheva Mitzvot would theoretically be a Ger Toshav, and that seems to be exactly what the Meiri is getting towards over here. But he actually widens it, because it's not only somebody who accepts the Sheva Mitzvot, he's saying that's going to be on a default level Christians and Muslims. And he does say that fairly clearly in other places. Yes? I don't know. Could be. Hinduism. Yeah, could be.
Fruit.
Fruit.
Is that, no, in today's day, I mean...
Probably. And therefore he... The Ramban, and we will come back to the Ramban again later on, there's what the Ramban wrote and what people said about the Ramban. So let's first look at the Ramban wrote. Which, by the way, is missed by numerous, numerous sources. All kinds of people who lived after this did not find this Ramban for whatever reason. The Ramban is written on, the Rambam had a book of mitzvot. The Ramban replied to the mitzvot. But he also accused the Rambam of forgetting a couple of mitzvot. I believe that we discussed this early in the year when we had the case about leaving Israel. Right, there were also, we saw the Ramban on mitzvot that were forgotten. Here he writes the 16th mitzvah, Yudvav. Right, in those days people weren't afraid of such things. This is source 5. Mitzvah Yudvav shenitztavenu lahachyot ger toshav, that we have an obligation of saving the life of a ger toshav. A ger toshav is somebody who's a monotheist, or somebody who accepts the seven mitzvot. Lahatzil lo mira'ato she'im haya toveya b'nahar o nafal alav hagal she'bechol kochenu nitrach b'hatzalato, that we need to do whatever we can if they were drowning or if a building fell on them. We need to do b'kol kochenu, you notice, all of our strength, our ability to save them. V'im haya chole nitasek b'fuato, if the person was sick, we have to try to heal them. The Ramban, by the way, was a physician. V'kol she'ken me'achenu Yisrael o ger tzedek. And he goes, certainly, if you're talking about a Jew or a convert, I don't even know why he would distinguish. And it is here that we find that Bikoch Nefesh is Docha Shabbat. Now, I'm not positive within the Ramban here if he means that you would break Shabbat for the Ger Toshav as well. I'm not positive. And I've read it both ways, and it could be that I'm mistaken to assume that that is the case. But as I said, we'll come back to the Ramban as we go on. But he also is very clearly saying is that you're obligated to save a non-Jew, you're obligated to do all that you can to save the non-Jew. Let's now go back to somebody who dealt with this clearly, and that is the Chatam Sofer. And the Chatam Sofer, in our mind, is one of these people who very often is accused of bringing all kinds of chumrot and all kinds of stringencies and so on. As, again, his name is Rav Moshe Sofer. He was born in Frankfurt. He ended up traveling to Hungary and there becoming a rabbi and becoming the most influential authority in over Jews in Hungary. And Professor Katz also wrote a biography of the Chatam Sofer, which is quite interesting. Let's turn the page to where it's underlined, because he's dealing with the question of breaking Shabbat to save a life, and he quotes the Ramban. But he doesn't quote the Ramban that we just now saw. He quotes a story about the Ramban. Mikol makom lehilchata, in any event, regarding the actual halacha, nearly, it seems to me, the yesh l'smoch that we can rely on, aha Ramban, on the Ramban, the Ovid Uvda Binafshe, Halacha Lamase, that he himself, not talking in theory, or not writing something which we were not 100% when we read it, but a case happened with him. What was the case? Well, we cut out exactly what the case is, but we'll get there soon. The case was, well, let's read a little bit further. If Im Kain, if that's the case, he says, Mutara Filu B'Shabbat, and he's going back to the case of the Gemara. If a woman who's a non-Jew is giving birth, are you allowed to help her? So he says, if she's in labor, certainly you can help her. So he, first, the Chatam Sofer says like this. If a non-Jewish woman is giving birth, you can break Shabbat and you could help her deliver the baby. By the way, I know in the movies they always say you need boiling water and towels. I'm not sure.
You're not actually cutting the...
Exactly. So what exactly is the halakha which is being broken by giving birth? Right, but what is the... Good. And now we're being technical. And as I said, aside from boiling the water, which I think that was always just to get the person out of the way, go boil water. I have no idea what the boiling...
In the movies, I've no... In those days, it was the only way of getting asepsis.
Okay.
Why do they always give everyone of them is giving an example of a woman in labor?
Because that's the case of the Gemara. That was the case of the Gemara. Well, I'll bring you other cases if you like soon. But the case of the Gemara was giving birth. So he says that you can certainly... So again, the Chatam Sofer, who's he agreeing with? Rabbi Yosef or Abaye? What did Rabbi Yosef say? That you can help her. You can even charge money. What did Abaye say? Abaye say, you explain to her that it's Shabbos. You can't break Shabbat for her. Say, sorry, come back and see me on Sunday. But call me in the morning. But the Chatam Sofer says, no, we know the Ramban himself, and the way he's quoting the Ramban here, helped deliver a baby. Now, are we surprised to hear that Ramban may have done this himself? No. Why? Because we just read the Ramban saying that you can help non-Jews, so that didn't come as a terrible surprise. He then says, if you can minimize the breaking of Shabbat, then minimize it, which means if you can have somebody else cut the umbilical cord, have someone else do it, because that may be a Torah law involved in cutting. And then he continues and he says, and he'll bring a word which is being introduced for us, at least for the first time today, that he did not know about. The im yesh be'eva, what does eva mean? Which means hatred. That this our lack of behavior or helping will cause there to be hatred, anti-Semitism, which who knows where that can end. The im yesh be'eva zu shash sakanat lefashot yesh lahatir afilu malacha diraita. That if there's some kind of a concern that this can develop into some kind of hatred against the Jews, then don't even hesitate to do a malacha deraita. And he then, where it's not underlined, which I will now explain what he just now said. He said that even though we know, and here he gets to a different category, or a different case, the case is where there's a fire. If there's a fire in the non-Jewish neighborhood, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that you are allowed to go and put out the fire. Why? So now you could tell me because it might spread. You could tell me. So it says, but there may be another reason. Putting out a fire is not a malacha midoraita. Because you're putting it out not because you want to do something positive with it. You're doing it so that it doesn't burn something else. So kibui in such a case is a malacha she'ena tricha lagufa. Right? You're not doing it for creative activity. You're doing it to stop it from burning. So it could be that kibui then is a special law. So therefore, the fact that the Gemara says that you're allowed to put out a fire in a non-Jewish area, it's not only because it might spread. It's because that there's no Torah law being broken over here. There's only rabbinic law. And again, then we'll go to our old principle that if it's only a rabbinic law, in such cases, the rabbis did not make the law. Which means in a case where non-Jewish life may be forfeited, he goes, in that case, there's no rabbinic law, and you're allowed to put out the fire. But then he continued, and he said, but, so if his basis for this is going to be, okay, I'll do this again. If his precedent is because of putting out a fire in a non-Jewish home, that would ostensibly only allow us to do rabbinic law, to break rabbinic laws and not to break Torah laws. And therefore, you saw a couple lines earlier, he said, try to avoid the Torah law. But then he came back and he said, no. The Shilti Giborim, the Gemara in Erevin tells us that it's not just a rabbinic law, it's not just putting out a fire, that happened to be that case. But if the only way to help him is to be breaking a Torah law, for example, let's say the water that you need to put out the fire, you need to carry it in a Rishut Harabim. So then you say, hold it, I'm allowed to put out the fire, but I can't carry the water. Say, no. Then you'd be allowed to carry the water because he says that it's not only because it's a malacha l'gufa, it's not only because it's just a rabbinic law, the Shilti Giburim that he says that you're even allowed to break a Torah law to save a non-Jewish life. The Chatam Sofer says we rely on this, and therefore if you can avoid breaking a Torah law, avoid it. If you can't avoid it, then you break the Torah law as well. And therefore, what was his conclusion with the woman giving birth? If you have to cut the umbilical cord, cut the umbilical cord. You're allowed to break a rabbinic law, certainly. And what's the precedent for that? Again, is because of putting out the fire. If you have to break the Torah law, go ahead and break the Torah law, which therefore means that we have a very prominent source. And I do have to stress this. The Chatam Sofer is not some fly-by-night, unknown posek. Chatam Sofer, during his lifetime, was arguably the most important posek, certain in Hungary, maybe even in all of Europe. And again, he's known as being strict only in some areas of law. And that's also what's interesting. He has not necessarily earned his reputation of strictness. He was very strict in terms of issues of modernity. He was very strict. Right, but that has nothing to do with the way that he ruled other areas of law. I'll tell you right now that there's no one, when it comes to Hilchot Nida, who's more lenient than the Chatam Sofer is. And based on certain things that he said, as a rabbi, you can get to all kinds of leniencies because of the Chatam Sofer. Over here as well, don't be so surprised, which means the stringencies of the Chatam Sofer were in certain very ideological issues. Doesn't necessarily mean that now you know what he's going to say in the laws of Kashrut, or the laws of Shabbat, or the laws of Tarat Mishpacha. It could be that in other areas, as you see right over here, he really gives you a remarkable heter. Continuing with the Chatam Sofer in source number 7. He starts off in Shinkav, where it's underlined there. He quotes the case of putting out the fire. And there he writes, because of Darkei Shalom, the reason you're allowed to put out the fire. Which means, he's telling you that, let's read it a second. Pasku b'shulchan aruch, simen Shinkav hei, sif bet, d'begoy ilay mutar, o mishum Darkei Shalom, v'ayin betasif kafen alaf, v'gudola mizu itir b'kibu d'leika, fili yotet mibet goy, she'ein sakana l'Yisrael, machmat yitziyat ha'esh, mikol makam im lo yisayeh lechvot yivolodei sakana. He says you're allowed to put out the fire, even if the Jews not threatened. And he says there's a reason for this, because of Darkei Shalom. What does Darkei Shalom mean? It's a little bit lower level than Eva, that we need to live in peace with our neighbors. And in the olden days, a fire would come, then everybody would come and get the water and put out the fire, and everybody would work together. And he says that the Jews need to work shoulder to shoulder. Where it should end, or?
Yeah,
It should, of course. of course, it should. I mean, it shouldn't have begun. He does say, and look at the paragraph underneath it, which is what I wanted to get to. He comes back to the money. Remember Rabbi Yosef said, you're allowed to keep the money even? He says, V'hinei scharo nirli she'nehu l'tztaka, kivun shu schar Shabbat, which a doctor had to work on Shabbat. So he says, he made money on Shabbat. So he says, so that money, which means you have to save a life, so save a life. But the money you make, you should give for tztaka. You shouldn't hold on to that money. Lo yanu mimenu nahida ein lomar she'ir pa'u b'chinam. On the one hand, the doctor's not necessarily going to want to do this for free, and he brings other considerations over here, but he says nonetheless, he ends up, and I want to get to the last line over here, ul'kol ha'pachot l'machot b'koach ikas sakanta la'hamocha ve'in v'yadena la'mira dat al'tila b'dor. Oops, okay, you know what, we'll skip that. He says that you're allowed to break Shabbat, you're allowed to break Shabbat on the Torah level if necessary, and the only hesitation we find there, again, we find two hesitations. One is, if you can avoid on a Torah level breaking Shabbat, avoid it. If you can, when it comes to the money, he says, better off not keeping the money. Yes?
What you're saying, if it's Darkei Shalom should be your guiding principle, then this article would be the exact opposite of it? The one you read at the beginning? Of this Haaretz fantasy?
Well, I don't know how concerned he was with, Shachak was with Darkei Shalom or Haaretz was, but as I said, the whole thing really was a blood libel, because
which is the opposite, you could say.
And Jewish law would say you should be helping this person because of Darkei Shalom. Let's continue.
No, Darkei Shalom has to do with non-Jews. This is even more absurd.
No, he claimed it was a non-Jew. He claimed a non-Jew had a heart attack. Mishnah Brura in Source 8. Now you all know that the Mishnah Brura is considered to be incredibly authoritative. The Mishnah Brura does have, again, what I think is a critique against it. Don't get all excited. And the Mishnah Brura wrote a very theoretical book. It's a book which is based on theory what Jewish law should be. And there are a number of cases where he doesn't take into consideration, for example, what local practice is. He doesn't take into consideration what local custom is. Rather, what he does is, this is what law should be. And it's one of the reasons why the Mishnah Brura was so valuable, as European Jewry fell apart and then people got displaced to new places where really there was no old local custom, and it became, you know, a wonderful way to arbitrate. Over here he says something, which we're going to see exactly why it's problematic, but he says something very, very clearly. He is talking about helping the woman who's non-Jewish give birth. At the end of this discussion, he writes, where it's underlined, Vida, and you should know, Daharofim bizmanenu, the doctors in our time, afilu hayoter ksherim, even the best doctors, enam nizharim bizeklau, they're not careful at all. Demasim mikol Shabbat, every Shabbat, shenosim kama parsaot lerufaot avodot ovdei kochavim, vekotfim, v'shochkim samamanim batzmam. They travel on Shabbat, they make medicine on Shabbat. They do this for the non-Jews. Ve'ein le'mamashi yismachu. And there's nothing for them to rely on when they do this. Now, we've all just now seen that there is what to rely on. He just says there's nothing to rely on, which means the Ramban that we talked about earlier, there's no Ramban. The Ramban himself did it. He doesn't seem to know about this. That the Chatam Sofer comes and says there's multiple reasons to be doing this, He ignores this as well. And he says, no, the afilu im neimadu mutar l'chalal Shabbat be'Isra Drabanan mishum Eva. And even if you're going to allow Isra Drabanan, which again was the Chatam Sofer starting point, which is based upon the Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to put out a fire, bein ha'ovodat glilim after gamze inu barur ayin primagad. Even that, he says, is not so clear about putting out the fire. Isid, you're right, the bevadai asur l'kuli alma, that in order to break a Torah law is definitely not allowed according to everybody. Now, you know that that's not the case. So, again, you're going to ask me to defend the Mishnah Brura here. I won't defend the Mishnah Brura.
Why is it Ovdei Kochavim? He lived in
I know. So is he accepting the Meiri? He's not accepting the Meiri. He's being very technical in his reading of sources. He sees earlier sources say Avodat Kochavim. He writes Avodat Kochavim, which means the Mishnah Berurah is somebody who really bases himself on what it says in books much more than looking out his window. And here, in this case, when he does look out his window, he's not happy with what he sees. And he says that this is not allowed according to everybody. Mechalei Shabbat gemurim heim b'mezid Hashem yishmarenu. And these people are breaking Shabbat on purpose, and God save us. Now, as I said, I could have showed you this before I showed you the Chatam Sofer, then you would have maybe even believed it. Yeah. He doesn't seem to say that. He seems to not like their behavior. You can try. Again, this would be a very good question if you happen to bump into somebody who you think is very knowledgeable. Show them this Mishnah Berurah, show them Chatam Sofer, and say, how could he say that this was not allowed according to everybody when you had... Now, the question for us really much more... And by the way, I know that there will be people that no matter what I say after this, that once the Mishnah Berurah said something, that's it. The Mishnah Berurah is the final psak, right? Dot, dot, dot. On the other hand, major poskim have not necessarily have concerned themselves in what things it says in the Mishnah Berurah, not just in this case. Because again, the Mishnah Berurah is a book which is learnt by Talmidei Yeshiva, and it's a very good book to learn. But when it comes to Psika Halacha, you can do a study and show how often Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked a question and the Mishnah Berurah spoke about it, and he ignored him. Meaning not even saying he agrees, not saying he disagreed. He just ignored it. And if you wanted the statistically, I haven't done the analysis, but my suspicion is it's far more often. I mean, it's more than 50%. He doesn't bother quoting the Mishnah Berurah because he can read the sources the same way that the Mishnah Berurah did. I do not, chas v'shalom, mean everything I've said in the last 5 minutes to belittle the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah was a huge Talmud Chacham, a very important rabbi. He, by the way, was not really a posek in his lifetime. He wrote a book about halacha, but he was not really a posek. The Aruch HaShulchan, on the other hand, which was written at the same time, was written by somebody who was a posek, and there's a very big difference in the books because of this. Let's look at source number 9, the Divrei Chaim. This is the Divrei Chaim from Sanz, Klosenberger Rebbe. He brings the two different opinions over here, talking about should one do, the question is, B'nidon Shadatot Mutar L'Rafei Yisrael Chalel Shabbat La'ino Yehudi, are you allowed to break Shabbat for somebody who's not Jewish? He brings all kinds of opinions. I want to read the very end of what he writes. In bold, in the second line to the end, he writes, L'chein B'vadi Yesh L'Hachmir. There's certainly reason for one to be stringent and not to break Shabbat. Then the last line, he writes something, Ach HaMinhag B'Rofim Shemikilim. He goes, the doctors are lenient. And then he writes, Vishamati, and I've heard, Shehumi takanot artsot lahatir lahem of a lower iti zebesefer. He said, I have a tradition that this was from the takana. Now, there was a takana of the Jewish communities. And this is the religious Jewish community made a takana, and he's claiming that there is a takana that was in place that doctors must break Shabbat in order to save non-Jews as well. This was a takana. And he says, I've heard about this. I haven't seen this inside. And again, this is something which the Mishnah Berurah doesn't seem to know about one way or the other. Certainly didn't quote it. Let's go to Rav Avadya Yosef in source number 10. And he will tell us more about everything that we've seen so far today. And he will give us all kinds of guidelines. Nish'alti mirofim yirei Hashem. I've been asked by doctors who are religious, shovdim bebatei cholim tziburim gam b'shabbat, who work in public hospitals also on Shabbat, ha'im mutar lehem l'tapel b'cholim nochrim sheish b'm sakana. Can they save the lives of non-Jews whose lives are in danger? Ha'mushpazim bebatei cholim, who are in these hospitals, gam b'melachot deraita. Can they also do Torah law? So now, what should the answer be? If you read the Mishnah Berurah, what's the answer? No. And if you read the Chatam Sofer, what's the answer? Yes. So, do you want to guess who he quotes? Go ahead. Who does he quote? Yeah, he quotes the Chatam Sofer, but he's also going to give us a little more insight. How can you possibly allow to break Torah law just because of hatred? And he says, certainly you can only do it for the Rabbanan. And now he's going through all the earlier sources which we have seen, which we are going to skip a little bit because you already know all this. Look at the top of page 5. Aval haminhag etzel harofim shemekilim gam be'isa Torah. Where did we see that? We just now saw that in the previous source. But the doctors, what is their custom? They're lenient. V'shamati shemitakanat arba atzot letir lehem avalor iti dezer b'sefer ad kan. And you realize now that he was quoting directly. Now he writes in parentheses, v'ayin lahalun behezber ha-takanah, he will explain it later on. He quotes the Mishnah Berurah, brings the Magen Avraham, and quotes the Mishnah Berurah telling us that this is very, very problematic. So his starting point is, it's a problem. His starting point is, how can you break Torah law? And his starting point is quoting the Mishnah Berurah. And then, as he continues now, he's letting you know that he's aware of all of the reasons to be lenient, to be strict, just in case that when he's lenient afterwards, you don't think he's lenient without knowing all of those reasons, and now he'll push them all aside. Ulam matzanu ra'inu b'shut chtam sofer, shivi ma shekatov ha-beit Yosef, b'betek ha-bayit, sheharamban, and this I didn't show you in the chtam sofer, but we're going to have the Rav Ovadia quoting the chtam sofer, quoting the Beit Yosef, that's of Yosef Karo, quoting the story of the Ramban that you don't know yet. The Ramban was a doctor. But what did he just now say? Fertility treatment. We're not talking. He's not talking over here about saving a life. He helped them on Shabbat. By the way, does this surprise you greatly in terms of the Ramban right now? I don't know exactly. I don't know what he did. Don't ask me. I don't know. The Rashba also allowed this in a tshuva. He hid. And the Rashba testifies, Shekein Nahaga Ramban, the Ramban himself also broke Shabbat in order to help the non-Jews. V'siyem Maran v'animatzati katuv, and the Rav Yosef Karo says, I found written, again, I don't know how far back this is, Shekatuv lo Rabbeinu Yona omasezeh. Rabbeinu Yona was very upset with this, and he wrote the Ramban, and he said to him, Tavo alecha bracha, you should be blessed for what you've done. Shatamar ber zaro shel amalek, that you've brought more amalekim into the world, which means Rabbeinu Yonah was not terribly pleased with the Ramban helping with the fertility of the.
Are you even allowed to help fertility for Jews actually?
I don't know what he did. I don't know what he did. I cannot tell. The Chtam Sofer says, I don't see how you can say that it's a case of Ava in such a case. Then if it was Ava, then Rabbeinu Yonah wouldn't have said anything. If there's anti-Semitism around, Rabbeinu Yonah wouldn't have complained. Rav Ovadia is explaining now. There must have been other doctors who could have helped. Why should he lose the money? So, as I said, this is... The only thing that I can imagine here, you know what, the only thing I can imagine here in this whole thing that we're reading, the one thing which is lacking is that it says anything about Shabbat.
That's what I was thinking.
Right. The whole thing, over, even though he's... I know. Even though he's bringing within the context of Shabbat...
Sources are kind of a little vague on the Shabbat or
right. So it must have been the Ramban is helping and it's not Shabbat. It must have been. I mean, that's all I can say. And then he writes, La halacha nearly sheish l'smoch l'Ramban d'avid uvda b'navshe, halacha l'masa, ulafize b'shabbat yeshatir before she'em b'shum chilol Shabbat. And he goes, therefore, you should be allowed to do this on Shabbat as well. V'im yesh be'eva zechshash b'shum sakanat v'shosh yeshatir filo malachot d'raita. And if we're dealing with a problem, a possibility of anti-Semitism, then you can certainly break Shabbat as well. And then he quotes the whole thing about putting out the fire, which we don't have to go into because you already know. And then he gives us a little bit more explanation about what he believes to be the understanding of Eva and why it's a problem. And this is around two-thirds of the way down. The first word in line, it says, De'ika Eva ba'alma, and it's underlined afterwards, K'gon bizmanenu, sha'anu darin b'neim, va'al yedei mini'at ruf'ei Yisrael tapel b'cholei akum b'shabbat. If Jews don't help non-Jewish patients on Shabbat, Yosifu sin'a v'tachrut, it will cause more hatred. Tachrut literally means competition, but over here it means much worse than that. V'yamu ki damo shel akum kal b'einehim. And the non-Jews will then spread a rumor about the Jews that as far as they're concerned, non-Jewish life is of no value. And they won't accept our reason that for us, Shabbat is more important than life, and the only reason we break Shabbat is because that they can keep more Shabbatot afterwards. He goes, by us today, they're not going to accept this reason. If that's the case, if they're not going to accept our reason, so then even you can break a Torah law for Shabbat. Why? Because what he seems to be telling us is that if we don't break Shabbat, then their doctors will not be treating our patients, and there will be absolute sakanat nefashot if this would become public. He'll be even clearer as we go on. And he says, and it could be that in that Gemara, is that we're talking about where it wasn't all that often that Jews and non-Jews lived together. Gam b'tferet Yisrael, now here's a source from over 200 years ago. Okay, 150 years ago. Katav amnam bizmanenu shehamalchut ma'anisha ma'od lerofei o lemialedet shisarvu lelechet sheyekreum letapel b'choli akum o bialedet akum. The Tferet Yisrael, again, this is before the Mishnah Berurah, writes that if the non-Jews, if the government will find out that Jewish doctors don't treat non-Jewish patients or don't treat non-Jewish women who are giving birth, that he believes is that if there's going to be a punishment, so then there would be the reason for leniency. Let's continue. Top of page 6, he writes, Re'iti la'echad megonei doro shel hanoda b'Yehuda hu ga'on Rabbi Nissen Shidlov b'shut Maharanash. So to be honest, I'm not familiar with this, and he assumed that I wasn't familiar with it, which is why he tells us that he was somebody who was very well known at the time of the Noda b'Yehuda. He says, Shekatav shehol b'zanenu shetirit shebishas ledidchu delo mintri shapta lo mechalalinan lo yitzkabalu klal. He goes, if we were to go over to a non-Jew today and say to them, listen, I'd love to break Shabbat, but the only reason to do it for a Jew is because they're going to keep more Shabbatot. If they're not going to accept this answer today, so then that doesn't work. Which is, he's telling us that Abaye's suggestion, go over and explain to them, will only work in a place that people will accept that. Which means that they'll recognize that Jews really value Shabbat so much. They won't recognize this. So then he says, then if that's the case, Abaye's answer falls off. If Abaye's answer falls off, what are you left with? With Rabbi Yosef saying that it's allowed. So let's read again. He says, "Ubifrat min ha'et shenika kesar shivui zechuyot l'kol ezrachei hamedina." He goes, certainly in our time, when the emancipation has taken place and Jews have been given equal rights. He's still quoting from this tshuva. For reshut bidei yudim liyot rofim, kimo rofim menachrim. And Jews are allowed to go to university and receive licenses to become doctors. Umiyad bikabalat teudat rofe. As soon as they get their license, him nishbaim, they take the Hippocratic oath. Shelo lapalot bein nefesh lenefesh mikol omot, that they're not going to discriminate. Im hamiladot timna atzma milechet etzel yoledet nachrit b'shabbat. If the midwives would not go and help the non-Jews. V'yesh kshash ha'yelad yumat o ha'yoledet atzma tuval l'mishpat. If the person would die, the baby would die, so then they would be sued. U'tzvu yehi la'onesh mita o li'yisurin kashim krovim l'mita. That the person may get punished may actually get a death sentence or may get incarcerated. Havada sheesh latir lelechet lefetchila lepeil bo kura'ui. In that such a case, they're certainly allowed to go. There was a case of one of the ministers whose wife was going to give birth on Shabbat. It was her midwife in a number of pregnancies. And I and this other rabbi absolutely allowed her across the board to go and to help deliver. He's a very important minister. It can cause some kind of real blood libel. Well, this will be a blood libel for reason, right? If they wouldn't do it. And you should not only assume it's for somebody who is the wife of the minister. He says, for all non-Jews, you should allow it. Udekaimelan gabi deleka b'shabbat, just like the law is when a fire breaks out. Shemutar l'Yisrael l'chavot m'nechshash sakanot nefashot. And as the Ramah there says, v'lo rakiboy deleka mutar v'melitzrach shenikufa el afilu isur d'arayti yesh latir. And not only putting out a fire, but even doing breaking Torah law. And he writes, v'chein hiskim l'zegam hagon maharshal fishel sha'af l'chadreish yeshatilor fim yudim. So again, Rav Avadia is very good at bringing precedent. He also writes something then, which explaining the Eva a little bit more. Nimtzenu lemeidim shebizmanenu sheyesh chashash liyoter me'eva be'alma ve'im yimnu rofei Yisrael milatapel b'chol nochim b'shabbat v'yinichum lamut b'chuleihem yesh b'zaaf b'kuach nefesh ha'Yisrael ki b'hodeya ha'davar l'orfim goyim yichadlu heim b'atim Micholim Yehudim. This, now he says it clearly. If Jewish doctors don't treat non-Jews, then non-Jewish doctors won't treat Jews. V'terbeh ha-sinah v'kenah b'Yisrael yedei ad k'dei sakanat nefashot u'bevaday she-hatirit she-amru b'gemara l'didan d'minitrin shabbat mechalin b'zmanenu lo yekablu al da'atam klal. Non-Jews will not accept that argument today. V'nimz she-ikav v'nat ha-rofei be'et she-mechalel shabbat malachot ha-raita b'tipu ha-cholei nachri hu b'shvil b'koch nefesh ha-Yisrael she-nimz b'tipulam shel rafim nachrim. And he says, therefore, when a Jewish doctor breaks Shabbat to save a non-Jewish life, he says, what are they really doing it? They're doing it to save the life of the Jew who, in the future. And he says, if that's the case, then you're doing it for pikuach nefesh to save a Jew. I said, this is one of the reasons why people get upset at me at the end and say, oh, you can only do it because of the Jew. But that, and then he adds another point, which he's absolutely correct, and is even more correct today than it was when he wrote it. Ki bizmanenu kli hatikshoret mishuchalalim biyoter. Which it will go from one end of the world to the other in absolutely a second. And today it's even more true than it was then. And he says, Nira od shizot tamam sharabenu arba artsot. Shetiknu sharofima yudim rishaim lefrot chalim nochrim b'shabbat v'afil melachodorayt. He goes, and I think this is the reason that the Vada Arba Artsot that we saw quoted before told the Jewish doctors to heal the non-Jewish patients, because it will be pekoach nefesh for Jews if you don't do it. So again, we have tradition, we have precedent, and what's really strange, again, at the end of the whole, at the day, what's really strange is going to be the Mishnah Berurah, which absolutely ignores all this. He then brings an argument whether you could do Torah laws or not, but he gets into now what I think is a very interesting discussion. Va'od ayin b'shut chavat yair, to the bottom of page 6, second paragraph from the bottom. Shekatav she'im itil hasar alav l'chvor b'shabbat if the minister will force the Jews to dig a ditch on Shabbat, which is a Torah law, he says, that's considered to be melachah she'ein tzrich gufa. Why are you digging the ditch? Because you want the ditch? No. Why are you doing it? You're afraid of the ministers. So that's melachah she'ein tzrich gufa. That's allowed. So he says, if the doctor is saving the person's life because he's worried about anti-Semitism, he's worried about the Jewish patient who's going to be treated, he says, that's malachah she'ein tzrich gufa. What did the Rav Avadia just now do? He ended up showing why what we thought was a Torah law being broken is not going to be a Torah law being broken. So he just said, what do we have a principle? The principle is, which is in the Shulchan Aruch, you can break a rabbinic law to save a non-Jewish life. He's now going to show you how all doctors treating in all cases, again, it depends on their attention, could end up being only a rabbinic law and they're not breaking a Torah law. And therefore, even the Arba Arzot that said, you better treat the non-Jewish patients or it's going to cause anti-Semitism, we're out of the ghetto now, they're letting Jews be doctors, you have to treat non-Jews also, otherwise it's going to cause anti-Semitism. So that becomes then Malachash Ta'en Tzrichi L'Gufa, and that becomes allowed. As I said, it's an absolutely brilliant argument, but it ends up allowing it on a technicality, and it could be that certain people say, well, you know, I would like to believe that the reason that Jews will break Shabbat is because life is so important. So guess what? Even for Jewish life, we see that a dominant opinion in the Gemara is you don't break Shabbat because Jewish life is more important than Shabbat. Why do you break Shabbat? Because Shabbat is more important than Shabbat is more important, so you can keep more Shabbatot, which means the basic premise that you would have thought that life is more important, we're not told that that's the case. Let's continue a little bit more. What's the matter?
No, in that first class that we did at the beginning of the year, she brought, I know what her name was, she brought up a case, the chief of the rabbi of the army. And he said that you should leave a non-Jewish soldier on Shabbat to die if it's not going to cause a bath.
Right, so then you get these brilliant rabbis who come up with these statements, and by the way, the second they say it, it brings more eva than you can possibly imagine. In brilliance, they come up and say, well, what would happen if there would be a Jew and a non-Jew on a deserted island, and no one would know about it, and the other guy gets hurt, so do you let him die or not? So you're going to end up with cases like this, so you know what? If you're smart, you don't bring up cases like this. But over here, you say, it won't bring up Eva. Well, you just talking about it did bring up Eva. On a theoretical level, and that's really where things break down a bit. On a theoretical level, I can come and show, you know what, the Mishnah Berurah is right, you shouldn't break Shabbat. On a practical level, I don't think that there's anything really to talk about. And once you throw the Meiri into it, and you throw the Ramban into it, by saying that the non-Jewish lives should be saved, so then you certainly have a precedent. Correct. He says that the doctor who breaks Shabbat should have in mind when he's doing it that he's doing this in order to save Jewish lives. Or he's doing it because he's afraid he's going to get into trouble or lose his license or lose pay or whatever. Because once his thought is something else, it becomes Malach and Gufa. The reality is that as they do. In source number 11, that Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Waldenberg, agrees with Rav Avadia just about word for word. I ended up cutting out his whole tshuva here and only giving you some of his conclusions. He says initially that it's only better to break a rabbinic law because of A, you're allowed to break a rabbinic law. In Hay, Yeshna Eitza Michukemet Mivuseset al Divrei Gedolei Aposkim, Shal Pia Yatza Shagam Shaluch Shabbat Avur Akum Malacha Deraita, V'chein Avur Murim Lechel Shepherfesia, B'chol Zot Lo Yichashev Lo Keovid Al Chiyuv Deraita, V'hu Shemidei Higishom Et Tipul Arifu'i Lecholei Akum, Sheish Po Sakana Yichshavu, Shakol Kavanatam Bezeh, Hulo etzem rufuata akum ki im bekdei lehatzil et atzmo shlo yanash chumrot. Forget about saving a Jew later on. I don't want to get in trouble. If I don't want to get into trouble, it's a malacha she'en tzrichi gufa. Malacha she'en tzrichi gufa is only in a sidur banan. It's going to be allowed in such cases. And he says again, that's what the doctor's intention should be. And therefore, what it comes down to it is bottom line. If somebody's a doctor, you know what? If you can get out of a rotation, certainly in Chutz La'aretz, if you can get out of a rotation and you don't have to work on Shabbat, so it's obviously nicer. If my friend was upset about the doctors taking money for this, well, Rabbi Yosef seems to say you can take money for it. The Chatam Sofer says give the money for tzedakah. That's not what the Gemara said. As far as right,
and
it may be.
Dafka,
it may.
Shift on Shabbat,
It may be, because then a religious doctor will know exactly how to go about it. It may be. The question is, to what extent is a religious doctor obligated to sin himself, even Rabbanan, in order to save somebody else from messing up? As I said, that's a more difficult topic, which is independent of this issue. But the bottom line, okay, conclusion, bottom line, can doctors break Shabbat to save non-Jews? What's the answer?
Yes.
The Mishnah Berurah seems to be very stringent in saying no. Other people that we saw say yes. When the Mishnah Berurah says that this is l'kulei alma, everybody says this, and there's nothing to talk about on that. Again, with all due respect, I cannot understand how the Mishnah Berurah can come out and say such a statement when he, I would assume, knew very well that there were very prominent people that disagreed with him on that, and therefore say I disagree, say that I don't think that there's a leniency, but to say that absolutely everybody agrees with this, I find that very, very difficult. More importantly, Gedole Poskim Bizmanenu, as you saw Rav Ovadia Yosef, as you saw the Tzitz Eliezer, they come and they say that a doctor could break Shabbat for a non-Jew, even Torah law, but once they have in mind that they're not doing it in order to save the patient, but for other reasons, then it's a melacha shtein, it's a tricha legufa, and at that point it reverts not to be a Torah law, and this is absolutely a technicality, a loophole, but we live on loopholes. Shabbat Shalom.